Israel Nation. I'm going to do this introduction in French. Excuse me, Luc. Aujourd'hui, je reçois Luc Summerfield de HubSpot. Luc est le responsable du produit CMS qui vient de sortir chez HubSpot et il est aussi à l'origine de la méthodologie GDD, Growth Driven Design. Hello, Luc. Nice to have you today. Who are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It is always really fun. About 2.5 years ago, I moved remote to San Diego, California. So now even further away from all my friends in France. But it's always fun when we get in a call because one of us is drinking coffee. The other one is maybe enjoying some wine or something at night. So I always appreciate, like, it's interesting how time zones work sometimes.
It's the cool part of our job. We can chat. Every day I chat with people from USA, from Germany, from all around the world, and it's the magic of the HubSpot ecosystem too, this thing.
Yeah, my wife and I last night were watching a documentary on the 60s, and the 60s were a very different place. And the documentary was about people traveling in the 60s because airplanes were not as accessible to the average person. We didn't have mobile devices. Obviously there's none of this. And so I was like, man, that is just such a different world, you know, an exciting but kind of scary world where you're traveling into like totally you can't Google like, what do I see in this place? Yeah. So, anyway, it's interesting now these days how easy it is to connect with people. I think that's a good thing.
Luke, can you introduce yourself to the people that are listening to us or watching to us?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of work and career, I've had a long history in the HubSpot bubble, about nine years. First, starting actually as a partner agency for 3.5 years, and working with clients. We did a lot of web design, a lot of UX design, and some inbound marketing, and that agency ended up getting acquired, and I jumped to my next adventure at HubSpot. And so at HubSpot, when I started, they hired me without a role. They didn't know what I was going to do. They just hired me and was like, we'll figure something interesting for you to do. And at the time, our CEO, Brian Halligan, his big focus was getting people to do cool things on our CMS. We had a CMS for many, many years. And we were trying to figure out how do we get more folks doing cool things on it. And so that's kind of set the stage for my career at HubSpot over the last 5 years, is doing a tour of duty around the company, working on all different types of web and development projects, working on the marketing team, working on the partner channel team, working on the last 3 years on the product team. First focusing on coders, the people that are building the stuff, coding the stuff on top of HubSpot, in the last year on CMS Hub specifically.
Very interesting. It means you have this vision of different position, different jobs inside the company: developers, coders, marketing, CMS. This is interesting because it gives you maybe a more holistic view on the how you can use your website to drive business, to drive to go to your goals. What is broken with a website development or website reason? I would like you to talk to us about growth driven design. I know you have a big announcement a few weeks ago about the CMS Hub. We are going to talk about this, but I would like you I know you by growth driven design. The first time I heard about Luc Summerfield from HubSpot, it was when you launched the first GDD website. You bring some resources about that. Can you explain with your terms what is GDD, what is growth driven design?
I can start by briefly telling how the idea all came about. And it started with actually just thinking about the problems that we had gone through when I was at the agency, and the challenges that we were running into building these websites with clients. And for the last year before the agency was acquired, my role was operations. It was to try to make things more efficient, make things on time, on budget, more scalable. And the recurring theme that I saw that last year was that every single website that we did had problems. And those problems weren't because of a lack of talent. We had very talented people. It wasn't a problem with resources. We had some clients that just said, you have unlimited budget. Just do what you need to do it right. And we would still run into all these problems. It was the problem of these projects being these huge 3, 6, 9 month long investments of time, which for a small company was a lot of time to invest in your website. And it kind of forced them to put a lot of other things on pause. And then the website would always go over budget, get delivered late. By the time it launched, it was already kind of out of date and everyone wanted to change it anyway. And so there was like all of these problems that we were seeing at different levels. And then what we would do is we would launch the site and it would kind of just sit. Everyone was so happy it was done. They'd move on to the next thing.
I don't want to hear about it for 3 years. The website is
online. It's done. Let's not talk about it for a while. And it was kind of, you know, it's kind of crazy because your website is your number one marketing asset. You know, in this day and age, with the global events, it's probably your primary marketing asset if you're not able to do in-person stuff. And it's your number one salesperson, you know, always educating, always selling, moving people, you know, through their journey. And yet we were kind of letting people just sit for a year and a half, two years, 3 years until it became stale.
Maybe the problem is a lot of people don't see their website as an asset. They see it like I don't know how you say in English, a vitrine, like prospectus you give to your customers to explain what you are doing, and maybe a lot of them don't see it as an asset, as a sales resource, and they see it as something you have to do it if you want to be considered like a company, like a big company. you have to do a website, you have to go online. But a lot of companies, especially in manufacturing, because we are talking to manufacturing people today, they don't see it as an asset, as something that can be valuable and they can use in their business.
Yeah. So there's basically two shifts that we identified that are happening in the web world, and they're shifts that are important for everyone to be aware of, because it's the first shift is exactly what you're talking about. The culture shift. How do companies think about their website as a part of their business? And there's kind of this traditional mindset, this traditional way of thinking, which was very much that the website is just a business expense. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of a necessary evil that you have to do. And that it's a digital brochure, that it's kind of like we had some paper, some print item that we digitized and put online, and now we can send that out. And also the traditional culture very much thought of the website as what looks pretty, what does the CEO think? Yeah. And the reality is that we were guessing a lot. You know, there's a lot of guesses, a lot of assumptions on what we think is the best performing thing to do. And then if we set it and forget it, we never go back and make sure that that in fact is true. And so what we looked at was how are modern companies, the Slacks, the Ubers, the HubSpots, the Facebooks, how do they treat their website? How do they think about their website? And they take a very different mentality to what you were talking about, which is the website is actually a growth investment. So just like these, you know, manufacturers that are listening today, you have assets to the business, you have machines. Mm. And as you purchase a machine, as you put an engineer to work and improve and tune that machine, you know, that machine will have a output that helps the business grow. And that's the same sort of mentality that modern hyper growth companies think about, is this website is an asset to the business. And as we build it, it's like almost like a retirement fund. We can put time and energy and money into it, and it will produce more and more results over time. The second modern kind of way modern companies think about their website is that they think of their website less of a static brochure and more of a product in their product line. So for the manufacturers, you have a certain number of products that your product development team, you have probably maybe product managers and engineers that are always trying to improve the design, improve the functionality, make it more efficient. And you have those number of product lines. Modern companies treat their website like a digital product, like a product that's in their product line. They put people on there to think like product managers, to think like engineers, or think like optimization specialists, and find ways to deliver value to the customers through the website, just like your products you sell. And the website might be a free product. It might be something that's free and educational and helpful, but you could also charge. You know, online academies are becoming very, very popular. Finding ways to sell through your website is very, very popular. And so there's a lot of ways that you can start thinking about how we might turn the website into a paid product as well, or sections of the website. And then the last part that I'll mention is, you know, again, it's not so much what looks pretty. That's important. It's obviously you have a brand, you have a reputation, you want to make sure that in the market you're representing yourself how you want. But in addition to that, it's also about what at the end of the day is going to help the business grow and perform. And so just like your engineers collect data and find ways to improve over time, we're now in the technology world, it's easier than ever to collect data on what are people interested in, what are they clicking on, what are they interacting, what are they downloading, what have they purchased from us in the past, where are they on their journey in their life cycle, and we can use that data to make better decisions to improve the website, just like you do with your machines and like you do with your products.
And to you can optimize too the user experience and your buyer experience by using this data to eliminate friction. It's all about eliminating friction in the buyer journey, and I think it's important for them. So this is where GDD start, moving from a website. We see it as an expense, as a cost to a website, which is becoming your best salespeople, best salesperson in the company. Can you explain this methodology? How can you engage in this methodology, in this growth-driven design methodology, when you want to redesign your website?
When I was back at the agency, I was just describing some of the challenges we were running into. But in fact, it wasn't just our challenge. As I talked to more agencies, as I talked to more businesses, it turns out everyone is struggling with this. And so when I started at HubSpot, again, they gave me the opportunity to spend some time to figure out how do we help people grow with their websites. And I said to myself, if I started an agency tomorrow, what would I do differently to solve some of those? And so I put those ideas together into a process that is called growth-driven design. It's the all these problems that we talked about, the fact that the website, kind of, again, traditional website, traditionally we think of the website as a, let's talk about ourselves, me, 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 why are we the best? Why are we better than our competitors? Buy our product. And what we see is that you know, that, so that's a problem. Because at the end of the day, your customers don't really care about you. They care about how can you help me solve my problems. Traditional processes are also, as we talked about, very big. They go, they're huge time investment, huge money investment. They go over budget, delivered late, and then you set it and forget it. So those problems we talked about are kind of the traditional way of going about it. And the reason those happen is because we're using a broken playbook to build our websites from the beginning. So growth-driven design is the modern playbook for how to build a peak-performing website. And the process, again, this is the shift that we're seeing. The way that a lot of the inspiration for growth-driven design came from studying what HubSpot was doing, what Facebook, Google, all of them. But more so, what are those companies doing to build these world-class software products? And if we think of our website as a product, can we pull learning lessons from the software world and apply them to what we're doing in the website world? And so that's what we teach. And the way that we go about that is first starting with a customer-focused strategy. And what we mean by that is that you need to have an empathetic understanding of the world that your customer lives in, and then try to weave the website in as a part of that world. It's a subtle difference, but if you go a traditional route where you're talking about the business, you're kind of creating something in isolation, and then you throw it at the customers, and hopefully something sticks, versus meeting the customers or the prospects where they are and understanding their world, and then weaving your website in to help them in their journey. So that's what we start with, is the strategy, deep understanding of your customers, deep understanding of how the website can help. And then, of course, you want to find ways that your business can value from that as well, from leads, visitors, all of that. Then we move on to the second part, which is we build a website that looks and performs better than what you have today, but is just a starting point. We know it's not going to be perfect. Okay. We know we're going to have to fine tune it, and that's okay.
It's a complete shift, because most of companies, when thinking about redesign, we start to thinking about 8 months, 9 months, 1 year maybe of development and strategy under launching this website. In GDD, we start with a launch pad, a first website. This is something I found it sometimes confusing to explain that to a customer, especially if they have this experience with a website redesign, this traditional website redesign. If I am a marketer that want to sell that in my company, how can I explain this principle of starting small with a new website, maybe not perfect, but launch it, versus the traditional methodology? What advice could you give?
Yeah, a couple quick thoughts. The first one is, I think it's really important to just first keep in mind what a launchpad website is. So that's what we call these sites, kind of launchpad. It's the start of all your improvement efforts. And what it is that, again, it's a site that looks and performs better than what you have today, but is just a starting point. And we're going to work to launch it quickly. Okay. And that's really important, because when I say that, I think the first assumption that's made is that the only way to do it quickly is to cut a bunch of stuff out of the existing site. Like, let's pare it down. And that's one path that you could take. Some companies, that might be okay. But for other companies, that actually might not be the right path. So then the question is, well, how do we build something that looks and performs better than what we have today if we can't cut any content out? And so there's actually 5 different approaches that you can take. And we have a full free certification that talks about these approaches. But I'll explain one of them. And one of them is thinking about the format that you do the work. Let me give you an example. When I worked at the agency, one of the steps we had to do when we built a site was to do wireframes. We had to map everything out. We had to kind of see where things would lay down. And then, I did all the UX design. So I would build the wireframes out. I would send them to the client, but then they were out of town. So it took 2 days. They finally would come back. They didn't understand a lot of things. Yeah. There was a lot of miscommunication. So they would email me back. Then they would have to go to their boss, and then their boss would have ideas, and we'd have to make revisions. And so what would happen is, to get sign off and approval on these wireframes, it took, let's say, 5 days on the calendar. So 1 week of business week. And so the question was, is that back and forth format the best format to get to that desired outcome of sign off? Or do we approach it a different way, and instead we get together in a room for a half of day, and we get all the stakeholders together, we get all the creative ideas going, you get a workshop facilitator, and run it as a workshop with the desired outcome that we're going to leave here today with sign off on these wireframes, you know, the top 5 pages. And so what that does is it condenses 5 business days down into a half a day. And so therefore, if you use that workshop format, not only will it make the whole thing go faster on a calendar, But you're also going to get better results because the creative back and forth ideas, the diversity of people, the reasoning behind why you built something is going to make the approvals a lot easier because the stakeholders will be involved. And so the actual output, the ideas that come out of those are end up being much better than if you tried to do it on your own, you know, back and forth with context switching. And the pushback we get on that is that that's very time consuming, right? How am I going to get all these stakeholders in a room? But the reality is that this back and forth email and miscommunication and confusion is going to cost way more time. Over the course of the week or two versus just getting together and just getting it done. And so anyway, that's another approach is let's build the exact same site. Let's not move anything, do anything. Let's just work smarter by finding different ways to get the work done that's more efficient. And so there's four or three more approaches that you can take and you pick the one that's best for your company.
Okay, so you launch this launchpad. You work with the people in your company if you drive the project. After that, we enter in a continuous optimization of the website. How does it work? How do you choose? What tools do you need? Who can we implement this?
Yeah, and the continuous improvement is critical here. And I think we're going back to how do you convince people on a launchpad website? We are trained because we've done websites the same for years and years and years. And we are trained that if it's not perfect when we launch, it's never going to get done. It's just kind of like we're never going to get to it. Yeah. And so there's a level of weight or anxiety that it has to be perfect for the launch or it's not going to get done. But we recognize that is an unreasonable expectation. There's no such thing as perfect. And the only way to get closer to perfect is to build a system that allows you to collect real data from real performance and improve over time. And so hopefully when you talk to people about building a launchpad website, you also get them feeling comfortable with it, knowing that, hey, when we launch, the next day after the launch, we're going to keep working on this. Yeah. The next week, we're going to keep working on this. And so all those things we don't get to, or all those things that we built a first version, now we're going to go through a second phase of building, it's going to happen. We have a whole month right after the launch. We have a second month, a third month. And so that's like an important consideration. But to your question of like, how do you do it? We look at two things. One is the flow, which is like the rhythm you get into. So we have two parts to this rhythm. One is a quarterly rhythm. Every quarter, we're going to step back and directionally decide how do we want to change our focus. And then we have, once we set that for the quarter, we can jump in and start to get into a regular implementation rhythm. And what that looks like is we have what we call a wish list. It's all the ideas that will help the business grow from the website, all the investments you want to make into the website. And we prioritize those wish list based off of the highest impact actions. What are the highest impact actions that are going to help us achieve our goals and deliver value to our customers? And once you prioritize that, you basically say, look, in the next 2 weeks, we have this much time we can dedicate to this project. You put an effort score to the list and you pick off everything that you feel comfortable getting done in those 2 weeks and you start working on it. So some of you who are familiar with agile process, it probably sounds familiar. This is all built off of an agile process. And so it's basically putting agile process into place on a website. So that's the kind of rhythm. The second part of it is focus. And focus is really, really key because as many of you know that are listening, there's always a million things we could do, whether it's life, business, your website. There's always a million things to do. And so it's very important that we know how to focus our limited time and energy. And we do that with a framework called the Performance Roadmap. And that basically will give your product manager or your strategist who owns the website a guide on where to focus based off of where the website is, how it's performing. Typically, the first, right after the launch pad, you go into something where you're basically still establishing the base foundation site. We call that the establish theme. And so on the quarter, you say, this quarter, we're going to work in the established theme. We're going to continue establishing the website by picking off things that we didn't get to, by building new sections we didn't get to, by making any very obvious improvements that we now see now that people are interacting with the website. And so naturally, that's kind of the first place you start. Then you transition at a certain point into the second theme, which is optimize. So this is where you're doing conversion rate optimization, you're improving the usability, you're doing personalization to the website, and you're saying, let's take what we have and make it even better. Help people more, make them find the value faster, generate more leads, generate more visits for the business. And then the last part of this roadmap is you get into the expand theme. And the expand theme is like, okay, we got the base site out. We've optimized what we have. Now let's expand the impact that the website has on our customers and on our business. And so what that looks like is you could look at how can the website be leveraged as a tool to help the customers on other parts of their journey, not just get them in the door, but how does the website help them once they become a customer? How does the website help them? Like, do we build dashboards and dealer distributor network, like areas that they can place orders in and that they can manage inventory and see what's coming new and announcements? Do we build an advocate program for our best customers, and build in a dashboard for advocates? So you can look at the entire journey someone goes on and find a way for the website to help, along with other departments in the company.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, marketing is critical. But we use our website to help drive recruiting and new candidates and get the right kind of candidates in the door. We use it to help lower support tickets, which helps save money to the company. We use our website to help the sales team close more deals more efficiently. So there's lots of other teams within the company that you could build sections into the website to help them.
Okay. So this is a matter of culture. We talked about the culture, how you drive the change. We talked about the process. You just give us some tips to build this process. I encourage people to go on the pass this GDD certification. It's a good way to learn all the methodology and to drive manage a web design project. The other part of the shift we are seeing in the world of web design is technology. There's a lot of technology here, to support our website efforts. We have a lot of CMS, a lot of platform. What is the importance of technology? I know a lot of developers are pro Drupal, pro Joomla, pro WordPress. Every developer has his preference. How do you choose the right technology? What kind of technology do you need to achieve the results you want?
When we looked at, again, there's, as you mentioned, there's three shifts. There's the culture shift, the process shift, and the technology shift. And when we looked at what's shifting in the world of technology, it became very clear what are some of the current limitations and challenges with the CMS or content management systems. Those are the kind of the tools you use to build your website. What are some of the limitations? And it really bucketed into, again, what we call traditional CMSs and what modern CMSs are doing. Traditional CMSs, and this is important anytime you evaluate technology, these are considerations to think about when you're choosing a technology. The first one is that we look at traditional CMSs and they have a certain requirement when you build out the site to layer on plugins, layer on technology, like all of a sudden like layer on more and more and more and more. And in order to build the site that is best for your business, you end up having 20, 30, 40, 50 pieces of technology kind of glued together. That's tough because what that does is it's a lot of different interfaces for your team to learn. it also causes a lot of conflicts where one plugin may conflict with another. And so a marketer makes a change here, but it breaks something else on the site. All of that software is built by different developers with different coding standards and requires a high level of maintenance and security. You have to always be updating this technology. Otherwise, if you're not, you run vulnerability risks with hacking.
A lot of people don't do it. I know a lot of websites developed on the CMS, on the typical like WordPress or Joomla. When the agency give you your website, in a lot of situations, you have to do yourself the updates for the plugins, for all this technology. Or this is a big risk for a lot of companies.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget because when you first get the site, it's shiny, it's new, and then you kind of, it just gets put in the back of your mind. And the reality is that you need to always be updating these. They say 75% of WordPress websites are out of date, which is causes 70,000 hacks a day. Like, that's crazy. And that's not only is that bad for business. If your site goes down and you have these security issues, like, that's obviously bad for leads and revenue. But it's also a legal concern where you'll see these vulnerabilities open the door for hackers to put JavaScript code on your site that steals personal information from people. And now you've got a legal concern. So long story short, what we're seeing is that traditional CMSs are very high maintenance. They force you to have to maintain the system to kind of keep it going. And that means your team is spending their precious time on the system, not focusing on their customers and how to provide value to the customers. Customers don't see any value from updating a plugin. That doesn't help them in any way. Now, when we looked at a modern CMS, and this isn't just HubSpot, this is Shopify, this is Wix, this is Squarespace. These are these CMSs that are just taking off in the market. They are all built on a SaaS infrastructure. And what a SaaS infrastructure means is it's SaaS stands for Software as a Service, which is the standard for every other piece of software out there. But for some reason in the CMS world, it has not, we're living in the 90s. It hasn't transitioned to SaaS. And what SaaS means is like all that stuff that we talked about, the security concerns, the updating, the having to like cobble together stuff. It's just all taken care of for you. You pay a fee to have access to software, but all of that headache is taken care of for you so that you can focus on your customers. Focus on value-added things, creating content, growing the business with your website, not updating a plugin, not bringing the website back from being hacked. And so that's the first shift. We saw four shifts total in technology, but that's the first shift that maybe some of you are have heard of or had to deal with.
I've built a lot of WordPress website before using the HubSpot CMS. The HubSpot CMS is not new. I use it for maybe 4 or 5 years. What is new? You just launched the CMS Hub product. What is the philosophy behind this product specifically? And what do you want to your customer to achieve with this product, with the CMS Hub?
Yeah, let me go through. I'll set the stage by explaining really briefly. I'll keep it short. The three other shifts that we're seeing, because the reason we built this and how we built it was to try to overcome these challenges with traditional CMSs. The second one that we saw was that because the websites get so complex, you start to create gatekeepers where there's no way for the marketing team or no way for someone who's not technical to do any kind of work. Yeah. And it slows you down. It forces you to always have to go to a developer. The developers are kind of like annoyed that they have to go do these little updates, the colors. Like, they want to be building cool experiences. They want to be building web apps, not changing a button color. And so modern CMSs are built in a way that just enable the marketing team to just do all the work they want. Very easy to use. And then that frees the developer time up to build those web app experiences, the payment processing systems, the client dashboards, all those more complex things. And then the two other shifts that we saw are related to the fact that a website is typically a CMS lives kind of in its own world. It's not connected with any other data or with your CRM or, it's just disconnected. And that causes a one size fits none experience for visitors. The website looks the exact same for a first-time visitor, to a customer, to a prospect, to a dealer versus the direct customer. And so we know that modern companies, the Lyfts, the Uber, the Airbnb, they win on personalizing the experience. Amazon wins on personalizing experience. Facebook wins on personalizing. So because it's separate, it's very difficult to do, and it's hard for marketers, right? You almost need a developer to set anything up. So we saw that. And the last one is reporting on your ROI. Folks that are listening to this, you may be engineers. You know how important it is to use data to make decisions. And if the website lives separate from your CRM data, it's really hard to show the efforts. Yeah, and so you're kind of flying blind. It would be like, for engineers listening, it'd be like trying to optimize a machine without having any data. Like, you wouldn't know what to do. And that's kind of the world that CMSs traditionally lived in. So that's why, when we saw these things, to go to your question, why we launched CMS Hub. We built a CMS that does, that solves all those problems, built as a modern CMS. And
you talk about a marketer. So this is a very good tool for people who don't want to skip the gatekeeper, or to don't go to the agency to change the color of a button, or to add a web page. I will send some resources to the people who are listening to us to see how it works. But what about developers, coders, people who want to make their hand in the machine? Is it sometimes they may feel like it's not personalized enough for them? Is it something you have in mind with the CMS Hub?
Developers are extremely important for HubSpot and just in general. But what we are proposing, and this is based off of the direction the world's going, is that the role of a developer and the role of an agency is shifting. It's no longer, it shouldn't be, I'm a developer and I need to make plugin updates. No developer wakes up in the morning and feels joy or fulfilled because they get to update plugins. Like, they don't want to be doing that. It's not a developer and an agency shouldn't be updating button colors, adding new images. Like, we should just build a system to let marketers do that. And so what does the agency, what does the developer do? Well, if they're not doing that type of work, it frees their time up to do two things. One, it's up to the developer on HubSpot and on other platforms, but it's up to the developer to build the experience that a marketer gets to interact with. So HubSpot will ship, when you buy HubSpot, you get the base platform, and then a developer will build an interface on top of that base platform, which is what the marketer interacts with. So the developer can determine, I want to make this interactive, but I don't want the marketer to touch this because there's no need for them to. And so there's some level of guardrails to make sure things don't break, but it's up to the developer to almost be like a software developer. I want to build this piece of software out to make it usable for the marketing team. And the second shift that it happens is, now that they're not working on these little button color and plugin updates, it frees their time up, as I mentioned, to build really complex solutions that is probably what they want to be doing anyway. They want to be building payment processing gateways. They want to be building checkout systems. They want to build web applications, directories, event systems, like these more rich experiences. And so that's really the, I think, where the agency lives, is in the strategic advising of what to build and how to build it using growth-driven design. And then their developers should be working on these more complex things and setting up the system for the client or for the other marketers to be able to get their work done. So that's how we think of it, and that's how we built the HubSpot system.
You have putting a lot of effort in the interface. I saw that. I'm not a developer, or no, I'm not a coder, but I saw that my coders, my developers were very happy with the change that you have done the last maybe 2 years on the platform. It's more easy for them to use. You are doing a lot of good work to help them. Thank you very much, Luke. I don't want to take too much of your time. can you, if there is maybe three things you want to take from this conversation, to highlight, would you take for your audience?
I mean, I think the takeaways here are: one, first, think about how the website can be leveraged as a tool to help your business grow. And there's probably a lot of ways to do that that you're not doing today. And so there's a lot of opportunity, which is great, but you have to think about it as a company differently. The second takeaway is how you go about building a website needs to change. It needs to be treating it like a product, treating it like you do with your other, your machines on your floor, put an engineer on there. In this case, it could be an agency, put an agency on there to build and optimize it over time. And then the last one is, again, when you're selecting a CMS, find one that enables your team to get the work done and prioritizes your time, your valuable time, to building value to your customers, getting your work done, not doing things that are in the back where the customer is never going to see it. It's not going to help drive value. So I think those are the big takeaways from just in general, whether you're evaluating HubSpot or any CMS, those are what you need to look for from a process, culture, and technology standpoint.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Luc, for those takeaways. Vous pouvez nous trouver. Je repasse en français. Hein. Excuse me, Luc.
I can practice my French.
Vous pouvez nous retrouver sur toutes les bonnes plateformes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Enfin, bref, cherchez-nous et vous allez nous trouver facilement. Industrial Growth. Toutes les semaines, un nouvel épisode. Et puis, vous retrouverez toutes les notes de cet épisode sur le site vidéo.agencenil.com. Merci à tous et à très bientôt.